joining me now, this is called a seamless transition from somewhere, I believe it's from somewhere in Iraq, is it Lieutenant Colonel or Major?
No, it's still Major. We'll find out here in a couple of weeks. It's going to be Lieutenant Colonel.
Oh, are you kidding me? Unless you, you know, vomited in the Commandant's wife's lap, you know, Lieutenant Colonel, come on, that's like Lance Corporal Second Award. Are you kidding me?
And I don't know. I wouldn't put it past me. Anybody that knows me knows that I'm capable of anything, but not yet, buddy.
You know, first of all, I have to tell you that, first of all, let me get Mike Musselman on. But where are you? Are you? You're not in CONUS, right?
No, man. I'm in Iraq, doing God's work.
All right, Chris Julian, from San Juan Capistrano. Where'd you go to high school?
Went to Santa Margarita Catholic High School.
There you go, Santa Margarita Catholic. Used to get thumped all the time by Mater Dei. And but we probably don't want to talk about that. Went to college where?
Cal State San Marcos, Harvard of the West Coast.
I've never heard it described as such, but I'm okay with that. And what did you study at?
Yeah.
What did you study at the San Marcos?
I was a history major, man.
All right, hold on. I think joining us from the great state of Texas is Mike Musselman. Gunner, what's up?
Mike, what's going on, man?
Nothing. Say hi to Chris Julian.
Oh, that scrub is on the phone?
Yeah.
We're lowering our standards and talking to an artilleryman?
Yes, yes. We in the spirit in the spirit of Barney Barnum, we're lowering our standards. So, including the audience.
Mike, how are you doing, buddy?
Doing great, Chris. How are you? But you know, it's near the holidays.
I'm good.
So this is our give back to the less fortunate.
Okay. Yeah, I'm at a beautiful Al Asad Air Base. Not quite probably what we remember it from back in the day, but it's a shadow of its former self.
I bet you it's freaking sweet now.
It's not.
Al
Asad, it's actually,
I
wouldn't call it. No. It's actually quite different from the days when the wing ran this place. There's no salsa night, none of that business. I'm not saying we live like we're not living in the slum necessarily, but it's a lot smaller and a lot different, man.
All right. Well,
yeah.
First of all, Chris, tell everybody who are you over there with and what are you doing?
Yeah, so I'm over here with 82 Marine and Sailor Team, and we are advising and assisting the Zero Operations Command out here in Anbar Province that all Marines should know so well. And what we do is advise.
Did you say digital?
A company and a naval. What's that?
Did you say digital?
I did not say digital.
Oh, okay. Good. All right.
Keep going.
You said digital command and control suite or something.
Nope. So we're out here doing that, and we just actually got finished helping the assisting the ISF clear all the way out to Al-Qaim. So we've been busy since we've been here.
So when did you get there?
We got here in August. Beginning of August.
All right, so you've got enough time in. Okay, here's how we're going to do this. Mike's not long for this interview, so I know there's a bit of a delay, and it tends to make interviews suck, and we all know that. So what I want to do is I'll ask you a question, and then we'll go to Mike. One of the things I wanted to do, Chris, is that, you know, we're all familiar with Al Anbar, you know, from the last time I was there was 2006. What's the difference between the Iraqi army then, the Iraqi army we saw get their ass kicked on TV and get run out of Al Anbar, and the Iraqi army today?
I think the biggest difference is I think Daesh or ISIS has been a unifying force for the Iraqi forces. I think kicking them out of Dodge has definitely brought them together and you know, in many ways helped professionalize them a little bit. You know, they're not the United States Marine Corps, and they're doing it their way, but I would say that they are, they're competent. They're, you know, they can execute a plan that they come up with, and, they are, they're capable of doing things on their own. You know, they still, they've needed a little bit of our support in terms of fire support and a lot of other things, but, on the whole, they seem to have their act together. Primarily because it's them doing it, right? So, the 81-man team is not there, kicking doors in with them, or they're advising them, their higher level leadership, telling them, hey, this, you know, they give us their plan and we tell them, hey, we think that looks pretty good, or we, you know, we'd advise you to tweak it this way. And they go out and execute their plan and, with a little bit of help from us, and, they're doing really well with it.
Mike?
Well, first of all, I would say don't use the comparison to the United States Marine Corps. I would say something like they're not even the United States Army. So,
whoa.
I mean,
whoa.
Don't go top tier right away. Don't, not top shelf stuff. We're not even doing top shelf. We're talking about the well liquor cabinet, the stuff that you serve to your friends when they come over.
They're doing all right, Mike.
Do you have a question, Mike, or just an editorial comment?
I really don't have a question, because to have a question would be unfair, because that would mean that I'd have an ounce of careness in me when it comes to the Iraqi.
Okay, all right. So I'll ask you another question, and then Mike can get all soured up and bitter after you answer. So Chris, talk about Al-Qaim and then further out, towards, what are the two places where you can see the edge of the world from? Walid and, yeah. What's the other city? The other border crossing.
So we don't go up that high. That's not quite in our area. So Al-Qaim, Saba, Sadah, Ubaidi, if you remember any of those places, Rawa, Anna, Rihanna, those have been the primary towns that we've been, helping them clear, and, is generally RAO out west towards the, Syrian border as well.
So is that now all cleared of Islamic State fighters?
That is what the Iraqis say. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of cleanup and plenty of work left to do, but the urban populations are now secure.
So, Mike, do you have any editorial comment you want to make?
Do we have aircraft stationed at Al-Asad?
Yeah, we're getting a little more into like probably what I can talk about, but there's plenty of coalition air support in the area.
Okay.
It's ranging everything from, you know, there's American shooters, Aussies, French, Belgians, everybody's kind of pitching in and doing their part. The task force itself is quite integrated. Brits, Norwegians, French, the Danes do a building partner capacity. So the task force is a fully integrated, you know, coalition force along with the Army and Air Force as well. So, everybody's kind of,
is the chow hall good
down here? You know what I mean. What's that?
Is the chow hall any good?
Is the chow hall? It's not. We're not eating MREs, but I wouldn't call it. It's not the top shelf. It's definitely not top shelf chow hall like they have in Baghdad.
You're not having Monday French night, Tuesday Dane night. You know that type of thing. Oh damn.
No, we're eating, you know, big night around here Sunday. That's ice cream night, you know?
Whoa.
Yeah, that's hardship, man. Are they paying you extra money?
That is. If you're only eating ice cream.
Yeah, war as hell, who?
If you're only eating ice cream on Sunday, man, that is rough.
What the hell? I wouldn't go to war.
What is that? Chris, I'm curious. We watched Mosul get annihilated after, you know, Ramadi got rubbled. We watched just videos of Raqqa get annihilated. It seems that, you know, with less adept infantry that can move through cities and do things, you're left with the king of battle to just rubbleize different cities and then whatever, and aviation prowling on as well. How did Husayb al-Qaim and those cities fare? Did they suffer the same fate in terms of being pretty well destroyed?
No, actually, I mean, there was a lot of shaping that transpired in those areas, but,
okay, hold on. Explain,
you know, I think
explain shaping. When you say shaping so that people understand, what do you mean?
So, you know, months and weeks before you actually go into a city, there's a lot of, you know, you're taking your intelligence, you're with Iraqi and coalition and, finding out where the bad guys are, where their, bed down locations are, where their IED making facilities are, their VBID facilities, and their C2 nodes. And, we're doing our best to strike those before the Iraqis ever even get there, and help, shape it for them. So there's just less guys for them to fight once they get there.
Okay.
And I would say that we did a pretty good effort on that, in the cities that I named before. You know, I would tell you that, I think that ISIS probably put all of their eggs into the Raqqa and Mosul baskets and have not been able to mount that type of resistance, throughout the rest of Iraq thus far.
All right. Musselman, any questions or comments from Texas?
No, that's awesome, man. That's good to go. Do you have a battery there, or
can we talk?
Yeah, so we got a combination of we got a couple army batteries here. We got there's a French Caesar battery, and they're actually quite accurate and very very good.
Wait, what did you call them?
Are they towed? They're not towed artillery, then, are they?
They're not towed artillery. This is a pretty cool system.
That's
actually South African, I think. And it's like on a big semi-truck looking thing. And it's 155.
Yeah.
They can range out to about 40 clicks. They're very, very good. The French soldiers are quite good, actually.
They're not like us, where we still use Civil War technology.
Whoa. What do you mean? We love our cannon cockers.
We do.
We love our cannon cockers.
It's not their fault.
Their system's better.
We still have towed artillery.
Yeah, and your point?
My point is that you know, there are so many better systems out there, and we hedged our bet on the 777.
Okay, let's talk artillery now for a second, since Mike brought it up. Can we afford to go all untowed and all rocketed up? Is that simply a question of what you can afford financially? Is it a tactical choice?
No, I mean, I think towed artillery, finding the right towed artillery piece, that's a whole other conversation. But I think towed artillery, in terms of Marine artillery's traditional role in supporting the infantry, is the way to go. There's plenty of conversations out there about whether or not we should have a 105 howitzer that's a little smaller, or whether the 777 is the best piece, but I think towed artillery still has plenty of work to do
in
that situation.
Yeah, Mike. Yeah, deal with it.
Yeah, right. We got spoiled because we had paladins in Iraq supporting us.
Yeah, and hey, as long as they didn't move. Well, Chris was the one clearing it, for God's sakes. As long as the target didn't move, and as long as you had like 20 minutes to clear it with every airliner that was in the vicinity, then you were good to go.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little cumbersome. Are you guys quicker? Chris, are you still in the fires clearing business? Do you call guys in and say, listen, son, you know, you got to get better at this. Are you in that business anymore, or are you out of that?
I mean, you know, I'm more of a fire support coordinator, right? So I'm taking all the assets we have, whether it's air, armed ISR, artillery, rockets, and I'm, you know, basically trying to find the right solution to every target with what we have. So, I mean, those guys have battery commanders and all that type of stuff, so I don't necessarily get too deep into how they're doing business. But, the predominance of things were striking. We, you know, air is probably king out here, quite frankly.
Yeah, air is always king. Yeah. You'd rather always have, rather have air than and Artie. For
when
God
it's
sake.
Up, when the, it's a clear, beautiful sky out.
What? Come on, man! It's always
yeah,
clear
it's
over
up,
there
for sure.
It's always clear.
Yeah, I don't know. We're getting to that season, man. It's
the
sandstorm season.
Please,
the weather sucks.
Come on, Julian. Come on, you forget. You, Mike and I have been there. Don't try to play that game with us.
Yeah. He's talking
no, I'm,
about.
I'm not lying to you, man. The weather's actually been pretty shitty last few days.
Oh my God! Like, okay, describe shitty for us. There was like 7 clouds in the sky, and it was kind of cold. That's shitty, right?
Yeah, I mean, we had a 2003 style dust storm not too long ago.
Oh, that's serious shit.
There possibly might be another one of those rolling in here soon as well. So.
Let me tell you, I was talking actually about bad weather yesterday with somebody, and I said. The worst thing I've ever been in is a dust storm. I don't know if either one of you guys were there. It was I think it was in the summer of 2004, and it felt like the oven door when you open it and that blast hits you in the face, and it was blowing. It was a dirt storm, and there was no right. There's no windows on a lot of places where we lived, and so you were like sleeping and you were. You know, you had dirt covering you and with mud, and it was...
I don't know, man.
Dirt everywhere. I hated that.
Yeah, but the dust...
Was that like the first time you ever actually used your gas mask in the Marine Corps?
No, you know what? This is how good of a Marine I was. I didn't even use it then. Yeah, so...
But in 2003, Max, the sandstorm in 2003, that dust storm,
yes.
I couldn't even see my yeah. Gun mantle on my LEV.
How hot was it, though? Was it hot or cold?
It was...
one was hot.
Yeah.
The one in 2003 was just awful. That was about that's the worst thing I've ever been in.
Yeah. The one in 2004 was... It was hotter than shit. It was like 115 and dirt everywhere, sweating your ass off. But it only, I want to say it probably lasted for maybe 36 hours, and then it went away. The one you guys are talking about, 2003, how long did that last?
It lasted for a few hours, but the after effects, you know, kind of lingered around for days.
Oh.
Yeah, it was there for a couple days.
Okay, all right. Chris, let me read you an email. Mac, one of the things I've read is things really changed in Iraq, first in Mosul after they did their operational pause, and then later in Raqqa because of the way that we pushed supporting arms coordination teams down to battalions. Did Chris have the same experience? So, Julian?
Not exactly. So, so we're in a joint environment here, right?
Right.
So, working with the CJFLC, the Combined Joint Land Forces, Land Component Command, is the First Armored Division out of Fort Bliss, Texas.
Cool.
And, I would tell you that, they run things a little differently. Joint warfare and, you know, everything from airspace deconfliction to fire support coordination measures. It's just done differently. They have a different thought process on how to do it. To say that I haven't had some rubs with the way they do it would be wrong. But they're all good dudes working the piece. I guess that being said is it's pushed down to our level. It's pushed down to our level to support the Iraqis as we need to, for sure. But we don't have a lot of, there's not a lot of brigade and, you know, battalion level advisor teams that are on the battlefield then.
Interesting, because that's exactly what they attribute the rapid pace, if you will, of operations around Mosul and then operations in Raqqa, at least according to what I read in open source reading, that coordination of supporting arms was key to helping the infantry move through the city. So, interesting.
Yeah, it is, absolutely. And, I mean, they want our fire support you know, they want our intelligence and they want the ISR, because it's a game changer for those guys, quite frankly. And if you were an Iraqi and you had access to that stuff, you would want it too before you put your, soldiers, into an area where ISIS could be, you know what I mean?
Trust me. Yeah, no, we've all lived it, right? I mean, to go to war without those assets now would be, you know, why would you want to do it? Mike, what do you have to get out of here?
Yeah, I got to run. The landscapers are here. They got here early.
All right. Say goodbye to Chris.
All right, Chris. Good talk to you. Good luck to you out there. Stay safe. And give us your address.
Yeah, good talking to you, Mike. Be well, buddy.
Yeah, we'll send you a really good care package if you send our address.
Yeah, I'll pass it on to Mike at the end of the interview here.
Okay.
Okay, I'm Mac. He's Mike. Okay. I don't want to be. Exactly. All right, Ben. I'll talk to you, Mike.
All right. See you guys.
All right. I got an email. I got another email for you. Matt, pretty cool, and the connection sounds really good. The pause is not nearly what I remember it being. Is that me, or have telecommunications improved? Yeah, Chris, I mean, the connection sounds clear as hell, man.
Yeah, man, I'm on a Nipper phone right now, and I called into you via the morale line at Balboa Naval Medical Center.
Is that your go-to? Is that your go-to access?
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So I call home on this thing and everything. Everybody does.
No, the delay is virtually non-existent, and it's really clear. Here's the email. Mac, awesome to hear somebody who is there on the program. Love it. Question. What are the cities of Fallujah and Ramadi like now? Yeah, that's probably a popular one. What? Tell us about our old the cities that we all have so much time either in or around.
Yeah, our old stomping grounds. So Ramadi and Fallujah got cleared before we got on deck. Ramadi was pretty much leveled. I wouldn't say completely leveled. I mean, but that city was destroyed pretty good. Getting Desh out of there. To be quite honest with you, I don't have a ton of knowledge on what happened with Fallujah, but I know Ramadi took a heck of a fight to get those guys out of there.
So relative to the reporting that you see from around the region, is the change forever? Are there still bouts with ISIS remnants or leakers that come back? Is that an ongoing fight, or is it pretty quiet as they lick their wounds from really the thumping that they've got in the region?
I mean, they're licking their wounds without a doubt. But I mean, you know, kicking them out of the urban centers, we denied them that sanctuary, and that's a good news story. But you know, I think you know as well as I do that, I mean, ISIS isn't finished. You know, they're still going to be capable at some time of mounting, you know, smaller type attacks and that type of stuff. You know, they'll flex their muscle again when they can muster a few guys together to do it. So, you know, it's kind of being on the lookout for those, you know, making sure we're getting ahead of those things, so when those opportunities arise and we can get some good kills, we can get it done, so they can't take back Iraq. You know what I mean?
No, we all, you know, watch now for, you know, what the second time, you know, the Iraqis have their country delivered to them to see if they can make something out of it. And, you know, we who fought there keep our fingers crossed that something stable and good will come out of it, and they find themselves at the same spot trying to do that again. The another question for you.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, man, because, I mean, the task force itself, it's pretty rank-heavy, right? You know, colonels, master guns, master sergeants, majors, you know, most of the majors are around my time and grade, so, you know, we kind of cut our teeth on OIF-1, and we've been kind of coming back and forth ever since then. So there's definitely a sense of, you know, hopefully they can get it done this time, and we don't have to come back here again in a few years. That thought's definitely prevalent in around here among the Marines, particularly since, Anbar's our, it's kind of our home away from home if you're a Marine. You've been in the service for, the last 15 years or so.
No, I mean, it straight up is, and all the places that you're talking about are places that I remember. I went out there when I was working for General Mattis. General Kelly took me out there after Captain Gannon got killed in Husseva, and we went and we checked out, the street where it happened. Kelly was very interested in finding out what happened, and remember when at the time, Lieutenant Colonel Matt Lopez and 3rd Battalion, 7th Marines, got it on in the streets of Husseva and swept the city that spring. And the huge fights went out there with Brigadier General Dunford at the time to Al-Assad to do some things as the division and the MEF kind of got ready to do Al-Fajr 2. And so, no, it is. It's a place, Al-Anbar. There's certain places that you think of Marines, Helmand, Al-Anbar, Chosin. Those are places that you say them, Way City and Marines come to mind. So it is that. Do you get the sense, in that you talked about, and I've got an email. I'll just read you the email. Mac, you said unifying relative to what it did for the military. Does he see any indication that the government is more unified now, and that there will be progress in terms of creating, as you said, something solid and good in the aftermath of our sacrifice there?
Strictly Julian's opinion here. I think they have an opportunity right now. From my limited interactions with the Iraqi government at the ministerial level, they're coming together with a plan and trying to make this thing work, without a doubt. I mean, you can see them putting the right pieces in place. But it's Iraq, man.
Did you just steal a line from Chinatown? It's Chinatown, Jake.
What's that now?
Have you ever seen the movie Chinatown?
Yeah, Jack Nicholson, of course.
Right. At towards the end of the movie, doesn't the other guy look at Jack Nicholson and say, "It's Chinatown, Jake"?
Yeah, it's Iraq, man. Once again, Julian's opinion. I mean, I think there's gonna, I think the pullout when we left this place for good in 2010. I can definitely see why that was probably not a great idea.
Right.
And I can see why there's probably going to be some sort of presence needed, at least in the area, for the foreseeable future. If you want my that's my two cents on it.
They're
going to need some oversight. They're going to need a little help.
Well, and again, that should, we were in Korea, we were in Japan, we were in Germany, and are still in those places, but I mean, chalk it up 60, 70 years after the conflict. So I think Chris and I would both tell you that as cultures, you were at least dealing, maybe with the exception of Korea, with modern industrial nations. And what we deal with in Iraq, and to a lesser extent, or to a greater extent in Afghanistan, they're not even close in terms of being mature before the conflict, and now kind of rekeeling that. You're not rekeeling it, you're inventing it for the first time in terms of a professional military. Another email for you. Mac, I read recently that there were changes in rules of engagement once the current president got elected and the current Secretary of Defense was installed at the DOD. Can Chris talk about that? I didn't think that we were really hemmed in that much by the rules of engagement. You certainly had to know what you were doing, but I think they were all designed to do good things. I'd be curious to know if he sees a difference in them, and do the differences make them more effective? You're a fires guy. That's your business, man. ROE.
Yeah. You know, so I was not here when the Obama administration was in office.
Right.
I can just tell you what I've heard, and that is that things got better before we got here. And what I can tell you is that the rules of engagement that we have here have facilitated striking targets pretty liberally. And when I say a target, I mean a good target. You know, the Daesh fighters, ISIS guys with no civilians and without, you know, and always limiting collateral concerns to the best of our ability. I mean, while we've been here, we've conducted, roughly 300 strikes since we've been here in the last 3 months or so, air, artillery, and everything else. And of course, we always have the inherent right to self-defense, and I've never felt like we couldn't get something done based off of rules of engagement. Sometimes it's not quite as timely as you want it, but we can always get it done, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you know, I was interviewed on a radio program. Actually, I was in Afghanistan.
I can tell you this, Mac. All it's right. A lot easier to strike stuff here than it was in Afghanistan when we were there.
Why?
The
biggest problem in Afghanistan, especially with artillery, air is quick, all right, but it's not always on station. With artillery, it was simply the height that when you use, rockets, they go high, right? They're really accurate, but they go high, and you've got to get that clearance, and that's what you wait on. I mean, the solution you get in minutes. And then it's waiting on the clearance, and hopefully that comes in a hurry. So I'll echo what you said. I never, if you know the rules of engagement, and we had smart guys that did, they never stopped us from shooting anything or killing anybody that we were supposed to kill, So I'm curious. So how different? Now I'm curious.
I think the collateral concerns, it's a little easier here. I think Hamid Karzai kind of had his thumb down on, when we were in Afghanistan. I'd say the Afghan government definitely wanted zero collateral damage done to any structures, wanted zero collateral damage to anything he did. I'd just say the Iraqis are a little more tolerant of that here. And once again, that doesn't mean we're not just, blown up buildings to blow up buildings. They're all good targets and valid military targets, all reviewed by lawyers and everything else. But I just say it's just easier to get done here with the rules of engagement we have here.
You know what? I would say this is just an observation, but when you are on the verge of losing major parts of your country, I think that in and of itself lends to a liberalizing of the rules of engagement, in that, when we weren't always in that situation and everybody wasn't always of the same mind when we were in both those places. But I think when somebody rolls into your country and takes a major piece of it, I think that those things get clarified, clarified pretty quickly. My guest is Major Chris Julian, United States Marine Corps. And what command do you work for in Western Iraq?
So we fall under CJ Flick.
CJ Flick.
We're part of CJ Flick, and then obviously we have responsibilities up to the MEB and to MARSENT as well. We work for the CJ Flick commander, Major General White, Army guy.
Okay.
And he's good to go. He's a great officer.
All right, and so and you guys are a command element? Are you guys advisors? Are you guys supporting arms? How do you guys fall in all of that?
So technically we're an advising team.
Right.
Advise, assist, accompany, and enable. Right, enabler is really the key component there of. The big three that I talked about, ISR, intelligence, and fires. And the 80-man team, it's set up like you would see in a basic normal battalion staff, a three, a four, a two, and all that business, an intel cell, a fire cell. And that team assists their respective Iraqi counterparts in planning and execution of operations.
So, do you guys have a joint combat operations center?
We do. So we have a combat operations center here, right. And there's LNOs that work within there, and we coordinate with those guys during operations.
All right. Interesting. That's always been, you know, something that we talked about, but because of clearances and technology and blah, 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 it's easier to talk about than to execute. Another email. Mac, this is awesome. I love these from the battlefield interviews. Relative to what we observed in Iraq back in the day, I was there in 2006 in the Habaniya area. What would be the biggest difference we would notice in the Iraqi army today?
You know, it's a good question. I mean, my vantage point back in that time was, you know, more of a lieutenant perspective, but lieutenant and captain perspective, but I would say, you know, viewing it from a, you know, basically a division and corps level, where we're really doing up the bulk of our assisting is, the Iraqis have their method and their ways of doing stuff, whether it's battle tracking or fires and a lot of stuff. And it's not, I think we have matured as a force and matured in our understanding of how to work with a foreign force. And we're less frustrated with the, them not doing it the way we're used to.
Right.
And, we've taken, a much more mature approach in allowing Iraqis to do it their way, whether it's battle tracking, intelligence, everything else, and, helping them execute in a way that they feel comfortable with and that they're capable of actually doing. And quite frankly, I won't get into too many specifics, but, you know, some of the stuff they do, it's actually okay. It's not how we would do it, but it's, you know, their battle tracking, for instance, it's foreign to the Marine Corps, but you kind of watch it and you go, you know, it actually works for them. So, I would say the biggest difference is just our maturity in, as a force, in terms of just, you know, being a little more patient and a little more understanding of, like, the cultural differences and how they do business. I think there's a collective, I don't know that it's accurate, but you know how Marines talk, you know, we just kind of sit there and say, yeah, everything's worked out so well for us in Iraq in the past. It's kind of a joke,
right.
A darker joke, but,
right.
Allowing them to do it their way is I think a better recipe for success.
Do you think that's a sign of us maturing as an advising unit? Because, certainly, in earlier days, you wanted them to learn the Marine way and do it the Marine way. And when you walked in and it didn't look like that, there was a lot of anxiety, a lot of frustration, a lot of anger, about, you know, these guys can't do it. You know, these kind of operations are too much for them. Is it a sign that maybe we've grown up a little bit as well?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'll tell you right now, they are not going to do it the Marine way.
Damn it! I hate when that happens.
Yeah, they are not going to do it our way. The relationship we've fostered, we don't make them do it our way either. And I think you get more out of them when you let them do it their way, and you kind of sit back and let them. Hey, buddy, this is how I would do it. And you know, be honest with you, they do take our advice. Sometimes they don't. But that's okay. That's part of being an advisor. You advise, and ultimately, you know, the general officer who's the Iraqi commander. I mean, he's got to have the autonomy to make his own decisions too, and execute what he knows he can execute. I mean, in Iraq, it's, you know, I mean, in America, we have like this very strict chain of command that's very linear, and everybody knows who's in charge and who does what and everything else. You know, in Iraq, it's more like, you know, Game of Thrones or something. You know, there's a it's not just an operation. There's also a political component to it. It's a much deeper political component than we have in the States. You know, we're kind of blind to that at the tactical level. As we're in Iraq, it's a major contributing factor of how they run operations and where the, you know, what region of Iraq are the units from? Like, who are the generals? You know, what's their religious affiliation? All those type of things come into play that just don't come into play in the American military. So you have to let them sort that stuff out their own way.
You know, I think that, you know, we are so different as as a force in terms of none of that stuff matters, right? There's the Marine way, and we do it that way. And then you go to another country that is sorting through the complexities of their own culture, this new organization that they have, the Iraqi army that's on, you know, what, the seventh or eighth version of it. How is it going to come together? And I've got an email about that kind of stuff. Mike, we've had discussions on this program about what will happen to the Kurds and the division in Iraq between the Kurds, the Shiites, and the Sunnis. Does Chris see any evidence of that on a daily basis?
On a daily basis, I would say no. I mean, I read all the, I mean, I, if you dig into the news and get off the talking heads and actually get into some real news, I mean, the same complexities that have been here for the last 2,000 years are still present, manifesting themselves in a more modern version of it. But all that stuff's still here, and it's stuff that they are sorting through. Quite frankly, you know, ISIS was a very unifying actor in that regard. ISIS, you know, unified the country, and one thing they could all agree on was that ISIS was no good and needed to leave. I think now we're getting into sorting out, now that ISIS is gone, you know, kind of we're into the now what, you know, what now, Lieutenant?
What now, Governor? What now, Senator? What now, Prime Minister? What now? What now? What now? And I know those questions are outside your lane, but you know we've talked about them here. Is that you know we've seen after 2006, 2007, 2008, you know that they had a window to try to get something done, and you know I'll tell you what, and we have the same political issues you know here in the United States that things don't get done. The only problem there is that the fault lines are pretty dramatic, and there's violence on the other side of it, and so a little bit more compelling. But they find themselves there again. We also watch with great interest. You know, the Kurds have been such a great ally. You know, what happens to them now? You know, they have the Turks on one side, the Iranians on the other side, and the Iraqis on the other. You know, how does that all work out? And is this going to be another? And you don't need to comment on this because I know you probably shouldn't. But you know, are the Kurds going to be left to some fate after being a loyal ally of the United States? And that's not right. So, but again, much interest, and we talk about it, you know, often here on All Marine Radio. Tell us something that probably would surprise most of us. That occurs there now that probably didn't occur when we were there before.
Besides the fact there's no salsa night at Al Asad Air Base, that would be a big
exactly.
That's probably the biggest one. I think there's a sense. I do get a sense from the Iraqis when I talk to them that you know, like we're a learning organization. I think we've looked at some of the things that have transpired in this area and kind of said, you know, maybe we could have done things a little better, maybe, you know, whatever it is. I think they are too. I think they recognize that, you know, they can't get their act together. There is, you know, entities like ISIS that can come in. I sense there was a new sense of interest in them to try to get this one right, which is that's a good news story, I think. And that's not just BS, I'm telling you. I think that's an actual sense I get. But, you know, we're going to have to see how it shakes out, right? The other thing, too, is, I mean, you know, our footprint over here is small, not just the Marine Corps. I just mean, you know, we're doing this operation. It's a smaller operation. There's not, you know, 100,000 troops in here right now. There's small bands of guys like us who are, you know, doing their advise and assist piece and, you know, facilitating the Iraqis in that way. You know, there's no Marines kicking in doors. There's no soldiers kicking in doors. It's really the Iraqis doing it. Like I said, they're doing it their way, which is sometimes frustrating, but it's their way and they're getting it done. You know what I mean?
I do. And I do understand the frustration. But the difference is, I mean, if we're maturing and, you know, it seemed obviously it was very successful. That recipe, very successful in Mosul and also very successful in Raqqa. And it looks like it's being implemented now in Afghanistan in terms of, you know, allowing them to do what they do and then being in a position to support it. And but also being in, you know, I know that, for instance, a special purpose MAGTAP, you know, still can perform fire brigade functions in the region if required, and hopefully they won't be, but they're there and they're in the region. Another email for you, Mac. Where are we? Are we? I know there were Marines in Takadam. I believe there were Marines in Al Asad. I've read there are other Marines that are down in Kuwait and some Marines in Baghdad. Is that how we lay down? And does Chris have any relationship to the special purpose MAGTAP over there?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's two Marine advising assist teams here. There's Task Force, we used to be called Task Force Al Asad and Task Force Takadam, but our names have been changed to Task Force Lion, which is at Al Asad, and Task Force Spartan, which is at, down there in TQ.
Do you want to?
And then there's Special Purpose MAGTAF.
Do you want to growl?
At Takadam.
Do you want to growl? Do you want to do that? Do you guys have like I'm a Task Force Lion or you guys
Lion.
You guys, it sounds like you're not too much about that. It sounds like you don't have that going, no?
I just don't have the WASDA you do to pull that off. There's SB MAGTAF down there in Kuwait, and we are The two task forces in Iraq are, you know, like I said, 80 Marine and sailor teams. That is our contribution. I mean, minus the guys who work on the joint staff and that type of stuff. But our contributions to 80-man task forces sourced out of one MAF, along with the Special Purpose MAGTAF in Kuwait, who's provided a ton of enabling functions for us and fill the gaps that we have. And that's who's getting it done.
All right. Another email question. Mac, does your guest have any experience as an executive officer of an artillery battalion? Be curious to hear his comments about hazing in the Marine Corps if he does. We, obviously, one of the issues that the Commandant has been all about, big issue in the 1st Marine Division after General Smith took over. You do have time as an XO, yes?
I do. I was the XO for 3rd Battalion, 11th Marine.
Whoa. What's their nickname?
Or Thunder.
Yeah, the Artie guys, they like those
names. Yeah, Thunder.
They like those kind of names. Talk to us about hazing. It's kind of interesting little subject in the Marine Corps these days. Your thoughts on what is it? Why does it hang around? It's interesting. I interviewed one of the patron saints of the artillery community, and that is Barney Barnum. Have you met him?
Yeah, great American. I have met him. I mean, he was at my mess night as a lieutenant at the basic school. He's a great American.
You know, his story is an awesome story, and I just had him on. I interviewed him on Friday, played the interview yesterday, but he was a good friend of Wesley Fox. He was a firing battery when First Lieutenant Fox, the actions of Alpha 19, where he became the recipient of the Medal of Honor, and it was Captain Barnum's battery. I can't remember, Echo 2 something, that was firing for it in Vietnam. And he said he listened to Colonel Fox's company attack that night. And he said, you should have heard that, the calmness that he directed that stuff. And what a great man. But, you know, he talked about hazing. He said, look, I asked him about it. He said, there's no place in the Marine Corps for hazing. He said, you know, we used to have initiations. But there was always staff NCOs around for it. You know, we lived in squad bays. So hauling somebody off, unless they were an absolute shitbird, you know, and making their life miserable, you know, was not something we really did. Yeah, you know, we've all, you know, done blood wings and pin guys and stuff like that. But we did that in formation, right? You know, and he said, look, you know, the first time I saw Bloodstripe, it was after a formation. It was on the parade deck. It wasn't up in the barracks or anything like that. He said, and then if I can remember what he said, look, for some reason, some of this stuff is a way that other Marines have taken it on themselves to either get back at other Marines or to abuse Marines. He said, and it never used to be like that. If you were a boot, there were certain duties you performed, but he said, I hear stuff like your clothes getting thrown off the top deck if somebody finds them in the washing machine, you know, them messing with your car, them getting you up in the middle of the night. He said, we didn't do stuff like that. So I'm curious.
That's Bush League.
Yeah, so what is this? And, you know, the latest one I've read is, you know, Kemp Pendleton out of MLG, corporal, never deployed in her life. And, you know, threatened to throw somebody off the third floor of some barracks over on Main Side. So I'm curious your thoughts on it.
She sounds tough.
Yeah, she does. She does. Hey, I'll tell you what, doing all those pull-ups, man. Yeah. So what is she's
upper, one of the second order effects of increased pull-up standards.
Exactly. But they got that upper body strength. You're going over the top rail.
Yeah, I mean,
your thoughts former XO.
Hazing's bullshit. It's really a distraction from the task, you know. I can't tell you how many conversations I have with my peers about, you know, I call it distraction from the task, right? Like the primary thing the Marine Corps does is we fight and win wars, right?
Right.
And all this stuff is nothing but a distraction. There's no place for it. You know, I'm down with some good ribbing, just like anybody, and having some fun with people, and you know, the good kind of camaraderie. It comes from being a Marine, and the joking and all the other stuff that civilians will just never understand unless you're a Marine. But just I don't know, the meanness, for lack of a better word, and you know, chucking people stuff off the third deck and chucking people off the third deck or whatever this guy wants to do, it's bullshit, and it's just a waste of time and a distraction, like a lot of other things that are going on in the Marine Corps. Yeah, I know why the Commandant's pissed about it. Like, I am too. I don't want to deal with this BS. And you're right, like, it's, you know, some kid who's never deployed, you know, thinks he or she is tough, and because they got a certain rank on, they think they get to pick on the people below them. You know, rank isn't about, you know, getting to wear somebody out. It's about actually leading people and making them better Marines. And a lot of the garbage you see transpiring in terms of hazing just has nothing to do with making people, better Marines, better warfighters, and it's nothing but a distraction, man.
How big of a problem is it? Is it so let me ask you this. This is a good question that you'll only hear asked on All Marine Radio, okay? Is it a stand by. Is it a problem or is it a symptom of a problem? Yeah, that's deep shit.
That's a good question.
You could get your Ouija board and decode that for a few minutes and then I'll wait for you.
Is it a problem? Is hazing the problem, or is it a symptom of a larger problem?
Which would be the vacuum of the vacuum of leadership at the sergeant, staff sergeant level.
I mean, this is just Julian's two cents, man. But I see Marines spending a hell of a lot more time in the company and battery offices than I used to. I'm talking leadership,
right.
Staff NCOs, lieutenants. People are stuck to their computers. They're stuck making PowerPoints. They're stuck doing annual training or whatever the hell it is. And people just aren't spending the time they need to spend down with their Marines in the gun park or doing training and kicking hip pocket classes and all the crap I remember from being a lieutenant. Of course, we always look back on our lieutenant time with rose-colored glasses, but I think it's a symptom of just people not being engaged with their Marines, quite frankly.
Why? Because there's so many other chicken shit requirements. I got an email from a lieutenant that said, hey, I listened to one of your discussions about hazing, and I want you to know that I got my ass chewed because one of my Marines didn't have his car insured. That's the level of responsibility that I have for them. And I thought about that, and I thought, what? Like, look, I wouldn't be get in trouble if one of my Marines got busted because his car wasn't insured. But now on the HARP form, it's another line that somebody added. So now I'm responsible for that. Like, what am I, a babysitter for little kids?
Yes. Yeah.
That's his
problem. You know, man, we started doing, once again, Julian's opinion.
Yes.
We have started, there's a whole litany of garbage like that that we've, like, started calling leadership in the Marine Corps, and it's not leadership to make sure somebody has their car insurance. And babysitting people. We do it because that's what I'm told to do, and I'm required to do it, and I make sure my Marines are always squared away before they go on LIBO with their HARP form and all the other business because I'm required to do it. This shouldn't be the nanny state either. You know, these are grown men, grown women that need to be responsible for their actions and have some personal accountability and responsibility as well, to take care of their stuff and, run their household and run their life, and I think the leadership component is assisting them in doing that in terms of, hey, Marine, you may have grown up in an environment in which, you know, financial management wasn't something the parents taught you. Like, well, good to go. Like, well, let's help you out with that and make sure you're paying your bills the right way and putting some money away and doing your TSP.
But I'm not gonna wipe your ass, though.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
But you're in the ass. Like, you're in the ass wiping business because I know, because I've got a first lieutenant son. And I said, hey, do you do this? And he said, yeah. Why? And I said, oh, just wondered. He said, why?
Yeah.
I said, because it's stupid, right? He said, well, I mean, it's just one. It's one of the things we do, Dad. I said, we do a bunch of that kind of stuff. I said, interesting. But in terms of,
yeah, absolutely, man.
How this exists. All right, final question. If you could fix one problem in the Marine Corps, what problem would it be? If you were king for a day, one problem you could fix.
One problem that you could fix. You're putting me on the spot.
Oh, come on, what did you expect? You're going to come on here and get softballed to death? Talk about ice cream and bullshit?
If I could fix one problem, okay, I'm gonna give you a bold answer. You ready?
Yes.
So all this stuff we're talking about with HARP forms and making sure Marines have car insurance and all that other business and 8-day briefs.
Right.
You know, I think the Marine Corps should divest itself of about 20,000 to 40,000 people, bring up the quality of the individual coming in, and quit doing babysitting. And bring in people who are going to be freaking adults. And I'm telling you, most of the Marines are great. Like, and this is not a hit on the Marines, officer or enlisted. But there is a segment of our population that sucks an inordinate amount of our time. And I think we need to find a way to divest ourselves of those individuals.
You're talking about a lot of the people who we see in the Force Preservation Board and things like that?
Yeah, I mean, the Force Preservation Board is, those are indicators of the Marines that aren't doing what the hell they're supposed to do.
Hello.
I remember the first time
I sat on that, and I thought, so who believes that this Marine is going to come back and be Philip Brown deployable after this? And so if you don't believe that, why are we even discussing that? So can we have that discussion?
Well, right. I mean, if you look at the Force Preservation Board, you can probably line up the roster from the Force Preservation Board with the guys having medical issues, and they probably go hand in hand. You know, the ones that haven't been to training because they have undiagnosed knee injuries and everything else, and they're all on the same spreadsheets, right?
Right.
Right. And so people that just need to disappear.
Right. And so, yeah. Okay. You know what? Let me just tell you, and we talked about it on that. I think most people would be amazed at some of these files that you open up and you look at them and say, this guy, this girl, he's never going to be a widget, never going to be a replaceable part. And so if they're not a replaceable part, I can't use them. And it's going to take, look, alcohol and depression. Look, we don't have, they might be Philip Brown just before their EAS, but come on, this is not a babysitting service. And so, interesting. All right. First of all, thank you for taking time out of your day and doing this. I appreciate it. So it's I'll read you one more email as you go. Hey, Mac, just want to say thanks to Major Julian for doing this. It's always cool to hear guys that are over there talking about what they do. We all understand their requirement for OPSEC, and even though they can't tell us everything they do, it's good to hear an update from guys who are there now, what they see, and their thoughts. Please thank him for the rest of us. Tell him Semper Fidelis and stay safe. So Semper Fidelis and stay safe, Julian.
Semper Fi, Mac, and always good talking to you, my friend. And let me just wish all your listeners a very Merry Christmas, and God bless you guys, and thanks for what you're doing. And it's always good to talk to you, brother. And by the way, I am not so busy that I did not work in an episode of The Big Lebowski. About a week ago.
Trust me. Julian can if you want him to recite it, and if we had two and a half hours, he could recite the whole flip for you right now, but we won't subject that to you. Will you email me your an address that we can send packages to? I'll put it up on the website. I'll shoot it to the gunner, and so you'll get.
Yeah, man. I'll hit you up on Facebook Messenger, man. I'll shoot you my address right after this.
All right. Again, first of all, thanks for doing this, and stay safe, and all the best to you and your Marines and sailors and soldiers that you got working for you.
Yeah, you too, Mac, and congratulations on how well your show is doing, man. Really proud of you, and I'm proud to call you a friend, and I wish you all the best over Christmas and the New Year, man.
All right, thanks. Yeah, it goes to show people I'm an open guy. I have already guys as friends. I don't discriminate. Julian's in the circle. Julian.
We're people, too.
Well, barely. But, you know, I have a few. Mike Frazier's one of them, right? Barney Barner's one of them. It's a pretty high bar to get over, though. I look at, when I meet Artie guys, I'm like, I got four Artie friends, okay? All right. I've got Buzz, I've got Julian, I've got Frazier, and I've got Barnum. And when they hear Frazier and Barnum, they know those names. They're like, so look, the chances of you getting in, probably slim. I'm just telling you. And they take it well.
Look, man, just to be named in the same sentence as the giants of the artillery field is an honor.
The Valhalla of artillery just got thrown down. Anyway, all right, man.
The Scissors Green. It was St. Barbara's Day yesterday, by the way.
It was? Well, happy St. Barbara's Day, man.
Yeah, thanks.
Did you guys have a big to-do, or nobody even knew about it over there, did they? Like three people.
People knew about it. Yeah, if you want to know the honest truth, I didn't know it was yesterday until the French artillery guy told me. I went, oh, yeah, I forgot about that. And, you know, he's like, well, you do not celebrate St. Barbara's Day? I'm like, no, we do, man. I just forgot. I've been busy.
Did you ask him, why didn't you invite me to your celebration, or did they not celebrate it?
Yeah, I told him, like, you know, don't hold out on us. I mean, I know you got wine up there. Don't tell me you don't,
exactly.
Jeremy.
Yeah. Don't hold back on that invitation. Is general?
I haven't gotten that invite yet.
Is General Order Number 1 still in effect?
It is in effect big time. So I'm saying this facetiously.
Of course. But the French, do they observe General Order Number 1? They do not, do they?
I'm sure they do on paper. I mean, I don't.
In practice, not so much.
You know, God only knows what's happening up at the French and Norwegian and Danish camps up there in the wee hours of the night.
Yeah, they have a little bit different worldview about things like that. So, and we'll leave it at that. All right, bud. Have a great day. Have a great night.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thanks for us. That is.
Yeah, no problem. I've seen it.
All right, there you have it. That is Major Chris Julian. United States Marine Corps, from Al Asad Air Base. How about that connection? That was awesome, man. That was awesome. And we will get you his address. And so if you are so disposed and you want to go ahead and send him something, you can by all means go ahead and do that. That'll do it on a show that went by really fast. And I didn't even get to. I want to talk about the FBI too. I didn't get to talk about the FBI. So, with that said, that'll do it. On a Tuesday, my thanks to in order of appearance, Bob Nielsen, who came on, Gil Barndollar, who came on. Nielsen talked about 100 entrepreneurs. You'll hear all of this in case you're just tuning in. as we continue. And then, so Nielsen talked about the organization he founded, as well as talking about the Barnum Fox interview that we aired yesterday. And then Gil Barndollar came on. And we'll continue this because I'm interested in it. And that is the drain of very, very highly qualified sergeants, corporals, the leadership of the non-commissioned officer community out of the operating forces and into MARSOC. And how does the Marine Corps account for that? What do they do? So you take your highest performers and a percentage of them head to MARSOC. What do you do for everybody else that has to step up into a job that is becoming increasingly more complex? Interesting little discussion. And then Major Chris Julian, United States Marine Corps. Yeah, he joins us from Al Asad Air Base. So we'll get you his address. So if you want to send a Christmas package, you should get it in the mail in the next week or so. And it'll get there during the Christmas season. And then the gunner who joined us for a few minutes till his landscaper showed up. Unbelievable. All right, have a great one. This program repeats itself right now, so whatever you do, don't touch that dial. On a Tuesday, All Marine Radio, over and out.